Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, I am broadcasting today live from a very special place. I am in Camp Barakal, which is in the far reaches of northern Michigan. We're right on the edge of the Huron National Forest up here. And I'm in a conference room with my studio resting on a desk, on a table made of like a tree. So they just like cut a tree in half and like put some chairs around it. And that's what I'm working with, man. It's rustic.
Did they make their own chairs too?
What's that?
Did they make their own chairs too?
No, I don't think so. I think these are pretty standard like office chairs, but the whole thing smells piney. Like I'm smelling a lot of pine up here. And I got to tell you, boys, I love it. I love this gig. I've done it twice. So this is my second summer up here at Camp Barakal. So this is a Christian camp. They have grade school, middle school, high school camps. They do family camps. They do like father-son retreats and really things all around the calendar year. But I speak at high school camps, so this is my second go around doing it. And I have to tell you, man, I don't know what your camp experiences were like as a kid, but church camp for me as a kid was always like a lot of kind of standard camp activities with some pretty bad theology thrown in. And this
well,
camp
you clearly didn't grow up at Bethlehem Baptist Church.
No, I didn't.
It was the opposite for Pipe.
Ours is killer theology and like no fun.
Killer theology and no fun.
No,
well, this camp,
true.
Man, I have to tell you, this camp blends perfectly fun and killer theology in that they are committed to good teaching, robust theology. They relaxed the good teaching a little bit in order to hire me. They must have had some cancellations, but I'm having a blast up here, man. And I have to tell you what's Paul's title?
Camp director.
I almost said headmaster, like it was like a Jane Austen novel. The headmaster of the camp.
He walks around and divvies up corporal punishment to misbehaving campers.
No, the camp director here is Paul Gardner, and he's ageless. Like he never ages. So that's a fascinating thing about Paul. But another fascinating thing about Paul is just that he's the most kind, gentle, warm, like even keeled dude I think I've ever seen. So I am learning at his feet this week. I want to be more like him.
Do you think
so?
That's
it's a new man
key
crush.
Is that the key to being ageless, being all of those things?
Dude, it must be because I'm none of those things and I'm aging like there's no tomorrow. So I feel like I'm 85. But this is good. I'm learning. So Paul may have... He may have reached the man crush echelon with Chris Hemsworth and Brad Pitt. So it's a trifecta right now.
I feel like those are just sort of categorically different crushes. Quite.
Dude, they are. They're very categorically different. But I feel like I'm a more well-rounded person now because of it. So
is it like date Chris, marry Paul? Is it sort of that kind of crush?
Oh, yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. That's a game we can't play on the air, though.
Fair
Fun
enough.
As that would be, Pipe. So listen, I want to give people a URL. I want them to go to campbarakal.org. I want them to get more information about this camp. I'm really hopeful that they ask me up here again because I've had an amazing time. My kids have had an amazing time. So my son is 15. He's kind of doing things with the students at the camp. He's loving it. So Camp Barakal, it's BARAKEL.org. So campbarakal.org, check it out. These are amazing people. They love the Lord. They're great at camp ministry. Nothing is fake, nothing contrived, no sort of, you know, cheesy altar call moments. It's just real, authentic Bible teaching and good times at camp and good relationships. So I can't say enough about this, Pipe, and happy to have them on board as our sponsors this week. But speaking of travel, a strange thing happened in that our boy Big R has been home for a couple of weeks. Big R, what has that felt like?
Well, you know, here's the deal, boys. I wasn't home last week. I was in Florida all week. And then I got back this week, and then you guys are out of town. So I didn't really know what to do with that. It was something I was trying to deal with internally, and it was a struggle for me. It was hard.
Maybe what was in Florida? Was this more sojourn pampering? Was this another, like, high-level meeting with the kind of flannel and skinnies crowd down there, or what? What are we looking
Baby,
at?
No, this was a low-level substance elders planning retreat.
Oh, wow. Baby, the budget at Substance must be booming. I want to get a look at your books. This is amazing.
It's not booming, man. They pay me $12K a year because we go on about 9 retreats.
Yeah, so. I can see that.
That's good.
I feel
that's like that's like a grand a week. That's not that bad.
Dude, when our guys go on a retreat, they go to like IHOP, you know, and you guys are just winging away down to Florida. Pipe, where do you think Big R's lifestyle compares with Creflo Dollar? Do you think they're like in the same echelon, like sort of trading private plane kind of war stories? Are we there yet?
No, I feel like, I mean, Creflo is, I mean, he's the one who was raising $53 million to get his own jet. And mm-hmm. I have yet
to
hear.
That would cover half of Ron's travel budget for the year. Think about that.
Fair enough. Although I will, okay, fine. I'll just commend Ronnie for not using the podcast to fund his plane. That hasn't happened yet, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, and I'm trying to save all my dollars from the from our podcast fortunes.
Yeah, yes, I feel like I'm trying to think what would be a comparable one. I feel like Ronnie is kind of like he used to be, which is like he is an indie band who has a huge following in like Europe, which means he's constantly traveling, going to cool places, but not drawing like stadium level crowds. And that's also something Ronnie may actually have familiarity with from a previous life, but he's that kind of traveler. So
yeah, I just don't know whether to be offended now or not. I don't know where
it's just an observation. That was not intended as an insult. I would have tried
to tell us what he's saying. Big T,
what he's saying, Big R, let me paint a picture for the audience. So you and your nine elders, Judas, how big is this church now?
Three.
The, the church is 14 people. Nine of them are
four, including
the
me.
The church is 14 people. Nine of them are elders. And the rest are children.
14 are elders.
Yeah. So you and these three elders, you much like in the touring musician days, you pile into a van and you road trip like 15 hours from Ashland, Ohio, down to the panhandle of Florida. Is this what we're looking at?
Baby, we fly. We do not drive. Let's not be ridiculous.
What are we, animals? What are we, savages?
Exactly. Come on. I don't have that kind of time.
Baby, one more quick travel item. I heard Big M was in Aruba for a week and a half.
Yeah, Big M was in Arubes. So I get back from Florida and Big M is gone for a week. So I'm, I'm batching it out like a
gentleman. The jet-setting family.
Oh.
Amazing.
I know.
Two ships passing in the night. That's what the two of you are.
That's what we were. That's literally what it was, man.
Mm. What does bachelor life look like for you, Big R? What is life looking like there?
Man, it's I'm eating well, I'm living well. It's just it's a nonstop party for me. I mean,
a lot of sports movies in the evening, a lot of sports any movies. Given Sunday,
people are coming over. The whole thing. I mean, the Martin Manor is just alive and kicking, man.
Dude, you know what it's like? It's like that party scene in Any Given Sunday where Steamin' Willie Beeman goes to
100%.
Yeah,
minus all the stuff that can get me fired and disqualified.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Boys, enough of.
It's an important day not to get disqualified, Ron, because I feel like maybe coming up soon you have a significant milestone in your ministerial life.
That's right, Piper. It's breaking news on the show.
Tell us about that, Ron?
I want to hear the song first, Big T.
Okay, hang on. Let me dial it up here.
Can you cue that up?
The breaking news song. Here we go. You ready? Dun, 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 dun. We have a little breaking news, and the breaking news is that our boy – Big R, Ron Martin, is about to become a reverend. So I guess I thought you were already a reverend. So Big R, talk us through that project and how that works. Is this like additional credits, like in addition to pastor, or what are we looking at here?
Dude, yeah, this is like the denom, right? So you have to get licensed. That happened 2 years ago. I had to write a 20-page paper, sit before a council for 2 hours.
Oh, 20
and then. Yeah, and then you have to wait 2 years. Then you got to write a 40-page paper, and then you got to sit in front of a council, which I'm doing tomorrow, for 5 hours.
Did you just hand in your half of the Bridezilla of Christ and be like, "That's about 40 pages"?
Pretty much, yeah. I just wrote a couple of paragraphs on our podcast, sent it to them. They said, "Great."
Yeah, and they're like, "This book, I didn't know this existed." Now, the real question is, do you get to get on an airplane for this?
We're going to do it. We're doing it in substance. We're doing it at my place. So, yeah, I don't have to do anything. And after that, I'll be, like, credentialed with the denom, and I'll have Rev in my official title.
Earned another sabbatical. That will be fantastic.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, Monday I'm heading out. This has been a lot.
Yeah, the sabbatical clock can start ticking with that denom now, too. So that'll be good, man.
Well, I'm talking to a couple of guys that have never written 40 pages on anything. So how do you guys even know what I'm talking about right now?
You're doing this on your home turf tomorrow, which actually feels foreign. So it does.
It's like I've never been there except for last Sunday, but I wasn't there last Sunday, so the Sunday before.
They should do this at like a gate at the Columbus Airport. Then it would feel – that would be your home turf.
I have sort of a philosophical question about ordination. In what way does a 40-page paper correspond to the average work of a pastor? Because those don't seem related terribly closely to me.
It's just so that they know, and if they haven't known it by now, they're in trouble, that, like, you know, my theology, they can recommend me theologically to, and, you know, to the world. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's all it is. Yeah. But it's like, I've already been, you know, I've been part of this denom now for a long time. I've been preaching for a long time. So it's like, brothers, if you're not good with it now, I don't know how this is going to change any of that.
That's true. Know? Yeah. Piper, 38 pages of it is going to be just travel receipts, though. So there's actually only two original pages needed.
Yeah, the question was, like, who is God and when did you accept Jesus in your heart? And because they haven't read the J.D. Greer book. So, and, you know, I just
Then the rest is, yeah, the rest is Jamba Juice receipts.
Yeah, exactly. Reimbursement
two
from Jamba Juice.
For my next two books I'm doing. And just see what they think.
Quinoa stands. Boys, we have, believe it or not, we have a lot of serious business to get to on the program today, including the business of deconstructing the phenomenon that is Mr. Rogers. So I am not on social media as much as you gentlemen are, but one thing that I've gathered from even just interaction in real life, which is a crazy thing to do, is that people are beside themselves over Mr. Rogers. There's been like a flush of nostalgia for this person. Based on a movie that a friend of mine distributed. So tip of the cap to his company, and which I don't remember the name of, which is Bad Radio. But
they didn't sponsor us, so who cares?
Yeah, they didn't sponsor us. They're nothing to us. Camp Barakal distributed the movie. How about that?
We'll go with it.
What do you guys make of this? What do you guys make of this Mr. Rogers fascination? And I can tell you that I did grow up watching the show. Like, I grew up, I have vague recollections of, like, Cardigans and Chuck Taylors, even though he wasn't a hipster. So this is confusing to me. So I feel like Cardies and Chuck Taylors, that has a much different connotation now. So Big R, as our resident man of the cloth and hipster, speak to the Mr. Rogers craze for a minute, if you would.
Dude, yeah, I don't know, man. I feel like it's like, I'm like you. I don't really remember watching it other than knowing about it and, you know, like vaguely, you know, seeing him, like, you know, in his living room doing his thing with that voice, wearing the Cardi and the Chucks and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of proto-hipster.
Proto-hipster, kind
of, yeah. But I don't know. To me, it's one of those, you know, I guess he was, you know, I guess he was like, you know, let me just use the word now because I can. I guess he was an ordained minister mm-hmm. with the Presbyterian Church or something, or something
like
that.
Lutheran, I think.
Tomorrow.
What's that?
Like you after tomorrow? I mean,
not like me after tomorrow, minus the Presby thing. Was it Presby, Pipe?
I think he was Lutheran, but I'm not sure.
Lutheran, sorry, same thing. And then, there's just this weird thing where, like, I'm sure the documentary is awesome, but I'm just sort of always fascinated how, because there's sort of an inkling and a sprinkling of, like, I don't know, Christianity or something related to Mr. Rogers, that for some reason, you know, evangelicalism just really dives on it and they're fascinated by it and they love it and they're crying about it and they're going gaga over it. And so, I shouldn't really say anything until I've seen it. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I just get, man, if you go on social media, everybody's like, this is the greatest thing of the year. And I'm skeptical.
Dude, let me ask this as a sub question to both of you. So this is a documentary. It's obviously like tugging at people's heartstrings.
Yeah.
What was the last documentary that like moved you to tears? Because I can tell you, I watched the Andre the Giant doc on HBO, and I had a big like pro wrestling thing when I was a kid. And like, dude, that one did it for me. I teared up a little bit at the Andre the Giant documentary. So I have not seen Mr. Rogers. I can't imagine it measuring up to one of my wrestling heroes from childhood. But what was the last doc you like got emotional over?
Dude,
I don't think I've ever gotten emotional over a documentary.
I just don't watch docs typically. Dude. So yeah, I'm the
wrong. You don't watch docs, Big R?
No, I don't, man. I like them, but I actually dig them, you know. But I just never really watch them. You know, how do you have time to watch docs in a, you know, on the tarmac? You know?
Yeah, how do you watch Docs on the Tarmac? There you go.
I mean, and that's the name of my next doc that I'm currently working on. Docs on the Tarmac.
The name of our next book with Crossway. How do you watch Docs on the Tarmac?
Get Pipe. JT on that ASAP.
Pipe, what do you make of this Mr. Rogers phenomenon?
Well, first of all, I fact checked myself, and he was Presbyterian. Ronnie was right, so good job, Ronnie.
Oh, dude.
I fact checked one other thing. It wasn't. He was not so cool as to wear Chuck Taylors. They look more like Vans. So they were a little bit more like deck shoe type of sneakers as opposed to the Chuck Taylors. So that's an important detail as well.
But he looked totally modern. Like for right now, dude, he looked like totally today. Totally modern.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you dropped him in Portland today. Yeah. He would blend right in, is what we're saying.
Right. It'd be like, oh, look, it's the lead singer from Modest Mouse. Oh, no, that's Mr.
Yeah, exactly. It's Rivers Cuomo from Weezer. Oh, wait, it's, Mr. Rogers.
Dude, crazy.
That's a good comparison.
It's Barney Fife. It is Barney Fife.
Ooh,
yeah,
it is Barney. Just like
I was looking at Barney Fife, not Mr. Rogers.
Okay. Dude, somebody should do that artwork. Photoshop Mr. Rogers' face onto, like, Rivers Cuomo's body and see if it works.
It's no different.
I don't get the phenomenon, in part because I never – and this is – we're probably going to lose listeners over this, guys, so my apologies in advance. But I never really liked the Mr. Rogers Show in the first place, even as a kid.
Now, that's fascinating to me, Piper. What didn't you like about it? And then I want you to talk about what you did like as a kid.
I just thought he was boring.
Yeah.
Like he's
he totally was.
I don't know a better way to put it. Like he was just boring. And even he was like, oh, we're gonna go to imaginary land. I'm like, this whole thing is imaginary. None of this is actually happening. Like, these aren't your really real neighbors.
Yeah.
Wait, that wasn't real.
So and then there was like puppets and stuff, and I was just like, what is going on? I don't know. I never got it. I like just sort of your classic cartoons and things like that. That show just never did it for me. So people's nostalgia over it, like I understand nostalgia over things that are formative from a childhood perspective. That makes sense to me. But the rising to the level of art, like reviews on the Gospel Coalition and it being like critically acclaimed, like I didn't know that he was so culturally formative, or maybe he wasn't and people are just grasping at anything that's – I think it's – Here's what I think it is. I think people are grasping at anything that's nice. Because nothing else being created
Nothing's
today
nice
is nice.
Anymore.
Everything is mean
wasn't
and angry.
He was like an American staple. I think that's what it was, because it wasn't like he was doing something necessarily like innovative or something, but it was like I think it was just something that like stood the test of time. Let me ask you this though, Pipe, and I want to hear from you, Big T, on this. Yeah. Like whenever, and I don't know, maybe it's my age, but I don't think so, because whenever it was like, you know, a Tuesday morning during the summer and I had nothing to do but watch like Leave It to Beaver, Flipper, and maybe some cartoons. Mm-hmm. Like whenever, and those were reruns, by the way, but whenever Mr. Rogers came on, I always
thought very young.
Dude, I always thought it was for like younger kids, and I was a young kid. So even as a young kid, I'm thinking, oh, well, dude, this is like for 3-year-olds or something.
Yeah, exactly. When I was, I would have been like 6 or 5, and I was like, this is for toddlers.
Right.
And because even the way he talked, I think this is going to, I mean, blanket apology for all of my negative opinions. The way that he talked sounded like baby talk to me.
Interesting.
And so it never resonated with me. I was always just like, what is going on here?
You felt like he was talking down to you, didn't you?
I did. I do not like it when people talk down to me.
I'm
going to do a doc called Mr. Rogers, Stop Talking Down to Me.
That's right. I'm better than that. That's what we'll call that one.
That's right. Boys, I'm going to defend it, though, because I think Mr. Rogers, Piper, I liken it to watching baseball in the summer. Okay. So I like to watch baseball because baseball is pleasant. It's a pleasant sport where like nothing really crazy happens. You know, it's not
That's
violent.
That's true. Even like base clearing brawls are really just like they're like cocktail hours in the middle of a diamond where people mingle around and a couple people are having an argument and other people are kind of awkwardly standing off to the side.
Dude, they're just standing off to the side. They're raising their voices at one another from across the room. That's it. That's what a baseball fight amounts to.
So and Mr. Rogers is like a baseball fight.
Mr. Rogers is pleasant like baseball is what I'm saying, in that he would go inside his house. He would like take his shoes off and feed his fish. And he was just doing pleasant things. It's why I liked the show Cheers. Cheers was just a pleasant place. And they wouldn't even have had to have had the storylines for me. I just enjoyed watching people like have a pleasant moment. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So Cheers is like grown up Mr. Rogers.
Cheers is grown up Mr. Rogers is what I'm saying.
But dude, you know what though? I'm not offended that I just don't care. I'm not offended that everybody's going gaga over Rodgers. You know, here's what it is. I just feel like I could see this one coming miles away. It's like, oh, this Mr. Rodgers doc is coming. Guess what? All of a sudden, you're going to get all these people that are going to be like saying it's, you know, it's critically acclaimed and it's life changing and it's heartstring tugging, which it probably is actually. But you know what I mean? Just you can almost kind of make a prediction on the things they're going to
watch by it.
You're going to grab, yeah, pretty much. And this one just kind of felt like that to me. And it kind of reeks of that. There's irony, right? It's so uncool. It's cool. So like, cause we're still in that particular era. This totally fits with that whole, you know, kind of thing. But
interesting.
I think it's interesting. I mean, and maybe this is inevitable when somebody passes away, but when somebody dies, somebody famous, we find out that this person, he or she has completely shaped someone's life, even though they have literally not mentioned them in 3 decades.
Yeah.
It was the same was true when Prince died.
Like, I haven't thought about this person in 3 decades. I haven't listened to a Prince song.
I don't know, man. Prince just had a little bit more of a cultural impact than Mr. Rogers.
Maybe. I don't know.
I bet more human beings laid eyes on Mr. Rogers than laid eyes on Prince.
Oh, that's an absolute certainty. He was on TV for decades.
Decades.
On like prime time, or not prime time, but like the prime networks. And
just iconic in different ways,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not comparing the two as people. I'm comparing the responses to their death where people who like go through life listening to Death Cab for Cutie, all of a sudden, Prince dies and they're like, oh my gosh, his music is amazing. And I'm like, you've never listened to Prince. You know,
but it's the same people that are going gaga over Rogers right now. That's what I'm saying.
Mr. Rogers has expanded in well into the evangelical sphere though, because he was one of like 4 TV shows that Christian kids were allowed to watch because he was a nice man.
Yeah, he was safe for sure.
That and Prince videos. They were both kind of androgynous.
They were both safe.
Did you say they were both kind of androgynous?
Yeah, they weren't, though. Mr. Rogers wasn't, though, for the record. I was just making a joke.
Yeah, HBO, Prince, Mr. Rogers, and Madonna. Those are the 4 things Christians could watch.
And MTV. Don't forget MTV.
That's 5. Now we're up to 5.
Piper, you weren't allowed to watch MTV.
No, well, in that case, we have to drop HBO because it was clearly MTV over HBO. HBO was – that might have been pushing the envelope a little too far.
Dude, remember when MTV was supposed to be like the end of like morality and society, and it's completely gone now? Like MTV doesn't even register.
So is morality in society, Ted.
Well, that's true. Yeah, so it did. I guess it worked.
It worked, dude. It just answered his own question.
Yeah,
I guess it worked.
It was sort of a suicide bombing of morality. Yeah, it just
so morality went away, and it was because of MTV. Next topic.
Well, that is a good setup for the next topic because MTV is something that my parents' generation was very outraged about. And I wasn't allowed to watch it, and for good reason probably. But Big R, you texted something about. I'm going to read the text, okay? Awesome. And we can vamp about this. So this is the words of Reverend Ron Martin.
Speaking in faith that he will be a reverend.
Yeah, I'm not quite yet. I'm not quite Reverend yet, man.
Piper, that's one of those just flaccid promises that I make. You know, we don't know.
That's true.
I don't know.
Yep, just lying there.
I don't know what's going to happen.
We walk by faith and not by sight, gentlemen.
All right, here's the text. This is Big R. I feel like there's this constant shock and outrage on Twitter from people who, quote, just can't believe how angry everyone gets over everyone's tweets. It's like saying you're shocked that humans are being humans. Unpack that, Big R. Teach us.
I mean, it feels already unpacked, but... Okay, so there's like this thing now to where you'll get like, I'm not gonna mention names, man, but you'll get like a B, maybe even an A-lister, you know, from our camp, and they'll kind of tweet something out or they'll comment on something, and before they know it, you know, they got 91 responses where you know half the people are just like mad and they're throwing things, And it's like, yeah, okay, like I get that. But then there's always this follow-up tweet, it seems like, by, you know, said A or B or C lister that just says, you know, it's just so sad to me that we can't even have civil discourse. Like as if before he tweeted that, he thought that there was going to be some level of civil discourse about
this is going to be the one, you know?
Yeah, it's so baffling to me that it's almost like it's like the thing talking about the thing talking about the thing.
It feels like it's one of two things. Either it's complete lack of awareness of reality, that they're not aware that people on Twitter are angry, even though it seems relatively obvious, or it's extreme ego thinking this controversial statement will be responded to with grace and nuance and a listening ear by angry Twitter. Because it's special. Which is it? Is it ego or lack of awareness or maybe both?
I think it's totally. I think it's ego. I think it's actually the. I think it's revel. I think they actually like the negative responses because, you know, bad press is good press. Any press is good press, and I think they just. I think they're kind of reveling in it. But you know, to show the outrage behind it is just kind of puts them. I think they're. That's how they're dealing with their guilt that they may have said something that made somebody mad. That's my take on it.
Dude, going to Twitter expecting civil discourse is like it's like going to a Little League game and getting mad that the pitcher isn't throwing 95 miles an hour. Well,
it's like going to a Little League game thinking that the dads aren't going to be angry by hour three.
Right. You know? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Twitter is the new Little League dads, so that's a pretty apt comparison.
So yeah. Why is everybody still doing it, man? If this is the case and everybody's all, you know,
I think it's perfectly fine to throw out stuff that's controversial on Twitter. I'd quite enjoy doing it. I don't expect positive responses.
Right.
Like it's a matter of expectations. If I also don't think of myself as a victim when people get mad at me. That's the part that gets me. When people are like, "Oh, I'm so offended that you were angry at my, you know, subversive controversial comment." Well, how can you be offended? Did you had to know it was coming. And so if you just expect people to be jerks, then you're not really surprised when they are.
Well, I mean, if you're like on a forum where you get to express your opinion, I mean, isn't it, you know, I mean, for somebody to express their opinion about your opinion, I mean, how do we not have that expectation regardless of what the expression is? You know, it doesn't make any sense. That's why I think it's actually people that actually love it, but that's how they're dealing with it.
Okay, so here's soon to be Reverend Ron. Do you think that this is more notable amongst pastors? Because in most cases, pastors get to stand protected behind a pulpit, throw out their favorite opinions or interpretations of things and not have negative feedback because you can't like tweet at someone during a sermon. And so like they're trying to treat Twitter like a congregation. And so then the negative feedback, they're like, whoa, 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 I'm a spiritual authority. You can't do this. Because I feel like if you're a journalist and you tweet something controversial and people come back at you, like journalists handle this stuff really well.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I think you're totally spot on. And this is what I would add to that, man. I think you're 100% on that. And the other thing is like we're in America, man. There's not a lot of persecution. And these are how people create martyr complexes for themselves. It's like, man, this is rough. This is rough, man.
People hate my faith because I'm being a jackass on Twitter.
I'm standing for the gospel right now. It's like, no, you said something that a lot of people don't agree with, and you're feeling like, you know, you're getting your hits because of it. It's like you're not.
Somebody being mad at you for being a borderline tool is not the same as being persecuted for the gospel.
Exactly. Go to TGIF, have like the, you know, have the Friday special and just carry on. You're good. You know, you're good.
Ted, don't you miss being on social media?
Oh, I do, man. I miss it.
Why don't you just get back after we're talking about it like this? I just can't believe you haven't jumped on.
Boys, not a day goes by that I don't want to jump right on social media the way we talk about it. You know, it sounds like an amazing place, you know, full of insight and understanding.
I appreciate that Pipe never, I never say anything really controversial cause I don't dive into those waters, but Pipe, I appreciate dude that you don't seem to care what kind of comments you get. I that's why we're friends. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Why should I, like if a stranger gets mad at me for having an opinion, like it's, why should I lose an ounce of energy over that or a moment of sleep or like it, I mean, I think I've been offended like three times at something somebody said to me on Twitter, and usually it's my fault because I let myself get dragged into something, and I don't understand the remotest little bit of value in being offended.
But dude, it's their right. Say. Like, you express an opinion, they're allowed to express an opinion about your opinion. It's the forum.
And I'm allowed,
it's what you
and
sign
I'm allowed
up
to
for.
Mute them if they're annoying, which
exactly.
I do all the time. Muting people is my favorite because then they, if you block somebody, they then have a martyr complex. If you mute them, they just keep screaming at you, but really they're just screaming into the void, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. Wow. So get on Twitter, Big T.
Yeah. Didn't we sell you on it, Ted?
Yeah, you give me a lot to think about here, boys. This is good food for thought. Fellas, I've got just a couple of minutes because I have to get back and get dressed for my evening chapel. I'm preaching in a kilt tonight.
Really?
Yeah, preaching in a kilt. There's a guy on campus. There's always – and this is a bridge into our last topic. So we've got like 2 minutes, just a couple of minutes for our last topic about speaking at youth conferences. But one of the things about youth conferences or retreats or camps like this, there's always like the one eccentric kid. And the one eccentric kid at this camp is like kilt guy. And every evening chapel, he wears a kilt. And I talk to him, I'm like, I'm going to have to borrow one of those, and I'm going to have to preach him one of those before it's all said and done. So tonight is kilt night for me. I'm going to try to get a photograph to you gentlemen of that, so you can do with that what you will. But yeah, it's on tonight. So I got to do a little wardrobe. You know, it's not about a show. It's not about, you know, the glitz and the glamour, but I'm going to have to spend a little time in wardrobe tonight before I go on, just getting the kilt situation completely. You know,
I mean, did you find something that like you have one that's like it fits? You're going to put it on?
Yeah,
he
took one of their picnic tablecloths and wrapped it around his waist.
Oh, wow. Oh, boy. That's a low blow. Piper's feisty today, Big R. He's feisty.
Yeah, he's he got some tweets he was offended by.
He's got some tweets. He's got to go write some angry tweets after this. But
we go take some shots at Mr. Rogers just to stir.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Exactly. Dead absolutely. Mr. Rogers. You know, that's the kind of guy Barnum's
nothing. Fiber nothing is. Like nothing like picking at a nothing like picking at a deceased children's idol.
A deceased children's idol who was meek and mild and never did anything to you. But but no,
he was a regular old shepherd, Mr. Rogers.
He was a regular. The nice thing about the kilts is that they're a little bit adjustable size wise, so it's not like. You know, it's not like you just get like a 36 or whatever. So, yeah,
is that going to help your talk tonight? How do you think that's going to benefit your talk?
I think it's going to benefit my talk because everybody's.
Yeah, you're going to feel free.
It's comfortable. I'm going to feel free, but it's still kind of modest. You know, modest is hottest. I'm not trying to like cause anyone to stumble here with my kilt. So, I think it's going to be.
I did have a question about that modesty thing because I feel like every Christian camp I've ever been part of has sort of a loosely enforced dress code.
Yeah.
Now, of course, usually it singles out females because the guys are like, you know, whatever. Usually there's like a length for shorts. Like they have to go, you have to be a certain length above the knee or something like that. Where does this kilt fall above the knee or below the knee? I don't know.
Yeah, Pipe, that's a great question. The kilt I feel like is going to hit right about mid knee.
Mid-knee. So, okay, well, that's acceptable because usually they have like 2 to 3 inches above the knee. That's usually in the acceptable.
Yeah, I feel like I'm gonna be right in line with standards up here. So I feel good. I feel above reproach in that regard as it pertains to modesty. So
that's good.
I'm just excited, man. To be honest, I'm excited to get that kilt on and get it going. So have you guys ever? Go ahead.
I was gonna say, have you ever worn a kilt before?
Never. This is a first time, man. First time kilt experience.
Can we get photographic evidence of this that can be shared publicly when this episode goes up?
No, absolutely. All right. Feel like anything that happens at this camp is fair game as it pertains to the show. So I'll make sure you boys get a kilt photo.
Absolutely.
And you're able to do with that whatever you'd like. So
I'm going to post it and then people are going to reply with angry things and then you can be offended because it's, you know, it's really aimed at you.
Yeah, I can be offended like from afar. Yeah. You know, you could just share the angry things. And
I will text you all the angry tweets.
It'll be several layers of angry technology will have to be employed to get me there. But I'll get there. So, boys, real quick, any favorite like youth conference or youth camp experiences for the two of you? Just like maybe one per person. Pipe, did you go to a camp, or was that sort of beneath, theologically beneath kind of where you were growing up?
I went to a couple camps like up through middle school that were more like classic summer camps, you know, where kids come from all over the state, kind of run by the denomination. So there's kids from all over the mm-hmm. state. One was called Trout Lake Camp. The other one was called Mink Lake Camp. That was like a wilderness camp. So we stayed in military tents and lived outside. And I'm sure we smelled just ungodly awful, because 12 year old boys in the summer without showers is a special experience.
Yeah, it is.
My favorite experiences were running camps, though. So in college, I worked at three different ones put on by different churches. One as the program director, which was like the games and activities guy. So I co-led
that. Yeah,
that's
big.
That was a lot of fun. It wasn't a huge camp, but I mean, so it wasn't like hundreds and hundreds of kids. But and then like running another one that had two or three churches present, with, you know, one or two other leaders, we sort of split up duties. And yeah, our goal was just to put together the nastiest games we could, and then create rules so that the students couldn't get any revenge on the leaders. So we would like run them through an obstacle course that ended with people covered in just about every condiment that you can think of, you know, so mayonnaise, barbecue sauce, sauerkraut. They basically looked like they had been puked all over. And then we would throw flour on them, and then make the rule that their team would lose the entire competition for the entire week if they so much as touched any of the leaders. So basically, being a tyrant—that was my favorite. That was my favorite kind of experience on the leadership side.
Being a tyrant and then telling them about Jesus, you know. And
we had a guest speaker. I just got to be the tyrant.
Nice.
Of course, you had a guest speaker. You had Big T.
The
Big T equivalent.
I wish we had had a kilted Big T. That would have, I think, more kids would have gotten saved.
That's true. I'm counting on that. You know, and I'll, in true like Arminian camp fashion, I'll give you guys a report of how many kids get saved as a result of the kilt tonight. So
yeah, and I think we've gotten your opinions on altar calls before, but maybe we need just a quick recap on Ted's thoughts on doing an altar call.
Yeah, how are you going to do that tonight, baby? Lay that out for us.
I botched an altar call at a Southern Baptist like youth.
Oh goodness! That's like cursing Mother Mary at a Catholic camp.
No, it really is. I botched an altar call because I didn't do the usual like. There's a whole cadence to it. There's a whole kind of you know, we talked about this on the show. There's kind of like copy that you're supposed to go through, but it's supposed to be memorized and.
Yeah.
You're kind of like a carnival barker slash like used car salesman.
Every head bowed, every eye closed.
Yeah,
you start
you're
with
kind
that.
Of the business of like cajoling people up onto the stage. And I just kind of skipped that part, and they were really put out with me. So that was badly done on my part. So yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
you can redeem it tonight, baby.
Hopefully. Yeah, I hope so.
Can you do it in the brogue of William Wallace? That's the question.
No, I can't. I can't do an Irish brogue, man. So
that was Scottish, but it's kind of the same thing.
Don't
tell the Irish people I said that.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
You get very angry. They must be like active tweeters. They're a very angry bunch.
The happy racist.
That's who we are.
I can't be a part of this anymore, guys. I'm done. Rachel the Hell Devils.
Are you Irish? I'm sorry.
No, I'm not.
Couldn't be less Irish.
Sorry to everyone I've offended about everything. boys, I really do have to go, though. I've got to wrap this episode. But in true Happy Rant fashion, we have wandered to and fro throughout these topics. I feel like it had been a little while since we'd recorded. So it was good to be back together doing radio with you boys. I always enjoy it. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
A crazy world out there, moms and dads. I'm Catherine Seegers, host of Christian Parent,
Crazy World, the podcast that tackles tough topics to help you be a godly parent in an ungodly world. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.